We have an interview with Dr. Gil Emilio.
We're looking at some free software on the Mac.
And we're going to talk about the future of our podcast.
All this and more, podcast number 70.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
And this should be a pretty cool show. We've got that interview with Dr. Gil Emilio.
Yep, he's the former CEO of Apple Computers, and we'll get into more of what he did during his tenure when we talk to him.
That's going to be a telephone interview, so I'm hoping, last week we really got the bugs worked out on doing interviews using Skype and iChat here on the computer, and then immediately we go back to a crappy cell phone to do an interview. But in this case, I'm hoping that the listeners will forgive the potential sound problems that we may have doing an interview open air on a cell phone.
Yeah, we were fortunate enough just to get him to consent to it. So
that's absolutely correct, and I'm really looking forward to talking to him. Before we get into all of that, we've got at least a half hour in real time before we get to the interview.
Yeah.
Although it probably won't be a half hour in the podcast time, because we'll probably stop the podcast at one point before then.
Yeah, and we've got a lot to cover, so
absolutely.
A lot going on, and looking forward to diving in.
One of the big things for MyMac.com this week is the introduction of a new writer.
Yes, John Martellaro has joined the MyMac.com writing staff. Why don't you tell us a little bit about John, Tim?
Well, I actually have quite a long history with John Martellaro, and not just professionally. We actually talk on the phone occasionally. It's kind of like an annual, every 4 months, John and I will get together on the phone and talk for an hour or two. And I've always enjoyed talking to him and emailing with him. Not only is he a real smart guy, he's a real nice guy.
Yeah.
Even more important for this topic right now is he's a great writer. I initially became aware of him because he was a writer at AppleInks.com back in the heyday of the Mac Web.
Mm-hmm.
When I say the heyday, there's nothing wrong with the Mac Web right now.
Right.
It's fantastic, and it's probably as strong as it's ever been. But back in, let's say, from 95 through 2000, probably closer to 97 through 2000, the Mac Web writing was just phenomenal. You had an assortment of talent that it really was unheard of at the time. Nobody else on the internet at the time had anything quite like it, and it's so hard to explain for those who didn't experience it. John was just simply a great writer over at Apple Inks, and he also did some they had a companion website at Apple Inks. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head right now. Boy, I wish I could. That's bothering me. But John wrote there. There was another John that wrote for him, John Farr, who occasionally drops in and writes at MyMac.com. In fact, he did our Photoshop CS2 review. And back then, there was also Roger Bourne, who's at MyMac. There was Beth Locke, who was at MyMac. Del Miller, who was at Apple Inks, who he's like still the one guy out there I would just absolutely love to get. Writing for MyMac.com again, because he was just, I loved his writing. Of course, David Avery, and we've got David writing at MyMac.com. So it's like these veteran writers from the Mac Web pre-2000, and most of them still to this day, obviously.
Right.
And they all seem to be converging at MyMac.com, and I couldn't be happier. I mean, these are...
Sure.
I so admire the writers that we have right now. But you combine these veteran writers with these new writers at MyMac.com, like Bakari and Donnie, I think it's just fantastic. And let's not forget people like John Nemo, who's been writing at MyMac.com for forever. I mean, it just can't get any better. It really couldn't. So, you know, to have John Martellaro posting some articles up on our site, I'm just thrilled about it.
Sure.
I think it's fantastic. So Welcome, John, and hopefully we'll see a whole lot more of you. I know he's also going to be writing from Mac Observer.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Chafin, the owner of the Mac Observer, contacted him, and he's going to be writing there, too.
Good.
So it's nice to know that...
seeing the stuff up on the web.
That's right. It's nice to know that Brian's checking out our site and stealing my talent. No, I joke. Brian's a great guy. Got a lot of stuff up on the website right now. We were mentioning Donnie. He's got his Macspiration number 23, sending email attachments.
Yep. And we've got another Kibbles and Bytes from Small Dog Electronics. Kibbles and Bytes number 453.
I really, really enjoyed Unicorns, Horses, and John Dvorak. And that's from David Avery. And basically, David's talking about the rumor of...
Max switching to the MS operate Microsoft operating system, whatever it might be sometime in the future, whether that's Vista or
whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, that Apple's going to drop the Mac OS and it's going to be Windows on Apple machines.
On all machines by that time. Well, unless you're running Linux, I guess.
And you think we should announce it now? I mean, have you heard back from the initial?
No.
You haven't?
No.
I say we still announce it. What the heck?
He agreed. It's true. He agreed.
He agreed.
That doesn't mean he'll be on, but...
No. We actually contacted John DeVort. I'm a big fan of Twit, This Week in Tech, and he's a mainstay there.
Mm-hmm.
So I emailed him, and I said, we'd love to get you on the show for an interview, and he agreed. And at that point, I handed it off to Chad and said, you know, he's agreed. Let's get him scheduled.
Yep.
So far, we haven't heard back from him.
No, I've contacted, but I've not heard back, and I realize he's busy. I mean,
especially with the brouhaha going up over this article.
Yeah.
Over the last couple days, at least, over the last week.
He's busy enough on his own blog right now, I'm sure.
Yeah, so. And you know, there's really no hurry for us to get him on the show. And it'll happen, though. He agreed, so I'm looking forward to speaking with John Dvorak.
Yeah, me too.
I've wrote some negative columns about him in the past, but the more I read his stuff now, with the exception of this whole Apple dropping the Mac OS and going with Windows thing, I tend to agree with a lot of the stuff that he writes about, so it should be fun. John Nemo posted a really good article. It's called Questions and Answers.
Yep.
Did you read that one yet?
No, I have not been through that yet.
It's a really helpful article. I suggest that anybody should just go check it out, because you're probably going to learn a thing or two that you may not have known before.
Mm-hmm. He's also got a review of the Razer Pro Solutions mouse and mouse pad.
That's an interesting product. I'm not in the market for a new mouse or a mouse pad, but it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't mind checking it out. Over on the blog side, Carmel Glover, again, one of my favorite writers, has written Why Men Are Indispensable. It's a very amusing read. Her husband goes away for 4 days, and the cat brings a rat into the house.
Mm-hmm.
She just locked it in his office.
Oh,
she's just not dealing with it. I thought that was great. Okay. Roger Board has the high-tech Neanderthal in America called Thag. go ahead.
Bruce Black has got Answering a Drilling Question.
Time to answer... A reader's question.
Mm.
Beth Locke posted the Amgen tour of California. It's about bike racing. And David Avery stirs the pot, as he is wont to do.
With a week in review. And this was 2/19/06 that was posted.
Yeah, where he basically takes Democrats to task. And,
yes.
You know, a lot of people they get so fired up when he posts an article. Mm-hmm. And it just gets a whole lot of discussion going. And I personally enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't agree with all of his political views, but I think that would make a boring world if I did.
And that's what the blogs are for.
That's absolutely correct. Everybody gets their say. And there's going to be a lot more up there. I suggest you go check it out. I thought that Donnie Yankelo posted one that was really good called Apple, the iPod, and the Olympics. Apple is just getting all kinds of free advertising at the Olympics, because you see some of these athletes warming up and stuff. There's those white earbuds. You see them everywhere at the Olympics. You show the crowd shot, all these people have the white iPod earbuds in their ears. And it's like, man, that's just great advertisement. That might actually be better advertisement for their product. You know, the iPod is such a lifestyle now. It's not just a product anymore.
Right.
It's got... I don't think it's quite got the mythos of the Mac OS as far as lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's approaching it. I mean, it's becoming as almost as ambiguous as a cell phone nowadays.
Oh, I think it's absolutely as ambiguous as a cell phone nowadays.
If you remember, for those who listen to the show week after week, and for that we apologize, last week Chad and I, at the beginning of the show, talked about the podcast itself.
Right. We asked you for feedback on what you felt would improve the podcast and what you as a listener were looking for from us.
and it really came down to the fact that Chad and I want to make this podcast as enjoyable and beneficial to the readers as possible.
Yep.
And since you guys are the listeners, we solicited your feedback. What should we do with the podcast? One of the things that we both have been thinking about is, should we really go into the news of the week and talk about it? Is that really a benefit to our listeners? And we had other, you know, what should we do with the podcast?
Yep.
So we're going to go into a little bit of reader feedback right now and see what people thought. and that's not the one. That's the email from Gil Emilio, and that won't help. Besides, it has the phone numbers we have to call. It's probably not a good idea we read that one on the air.
No.
Okay, I'll let you read this one.
Yep.
If you can see that. Wait, can you see it?
Yep.
I'm in Chad's way.
And this is from Marius Modig. I hope I said your name right. Tim, just to let you know, I've been enjoying your podcast since last summer. I always find it informative and engaging. However, you are correct with the news section. By the time I get to listen to your podcast, I've read or heard 90% of the news that you're covering. If it was up to me, I would have skipped the news section. As far as the direction of the show, hardware and software reviews would be very welcomed. Also, I would like to see some of the more general how-tos, maybe not basic how-tos, but how people are using Macs to accomplish stuff.
And we talked about that, too, that that's something we definitely want to get into more of.
Yep.
On another note, he writes, it would be excellent if you were able to produce an enhanced podcast with bookmarked sections. I would tend to think that the majority of your listeners are using iPods and iTunes so that there would not be a problem with compatibility. Then, if each section was clearly marked, it would be easy to skip or forward or rewind to it. I listen to the MacCast in the enhanced version, and I really like it. And I agree, an enhanced podcast is something that we are definitely going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe on this show or maybe not. I really haven't played with that feature.
Yeah.
And it probably won't be this podcast simply because we're going to be interviewing Gil Emilio, and I don't really want to mess up our sound file for such what I think is an important interview.
Yeah, I agree.
And then let's jump to the next one here. I have to scroll down because otherwise you see my response, and we don't care about that. We want to hear what the reader has to say. And this one is from Larry Winward.
Yep. Hi, guys. I believe variety is the spice of life. For example, the news can be brief and cover only critical stories, so you can still have it but keep it short. Then again, that's only if something is really going on.
Which is a good point. If there's really not any news going on, why should we even attempt to find news that we should report on?
And there are weeks where it really feels
there's
like
nothing.
We're fishing.
Yeah, you know, like 3 or 4 weeks before Mac World Expo, there's nothing going on in the Mac world. Yeah, we can report that such and such application that it was updated, but that's not really what we want to be doing.
Yep.
And he writes, so this is my suggestion. Keep it quick-paced and interesting. Interesting being the key, I hope.
Yeah.
Sure, there are times where exceptions may apply.
And he says, on the iRocks keyboard, the volume control wasn't missed by me. I use the volume control going into the Logitech optical audio control head.
Control head, yeah.
Yep.
He says, by the way, the Plantronics Pulsar 590A Bluetooth 2.0 headphones with dongle work good. Works good, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. The ear cushions could be better, but it has great range for my iPod. I can go around the house and on all three levels without no dropout or static. The McGallies Bluetooth headphones I have are a whole different story when it comes to range. Strictly line of sight and short range. And it chews up the batteries in just a couple hours. So I, you know, definitely appreciate letting us know. I haven't had the need yet to try any Bluetooth headphones.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I have Bluetooth on is my cell phone and the Mac Mini and my PowerBook, none of which I need headphones for.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that is something that we probably need to look at in the future and possibly doing some video reviews of headsets.
Yep.
thanks for letting us know about the Irox keyboard, that the volume control wasn't missed by you. It was by me.
Yeah.
I love having a... I use the volume up, down, and mute all the time on my keyboard.
Yeah, as do I.
And it's just something that... Oops, I'm using the wrong mouse there, aren't I? It's just something that I definitely miss if it's not there. Let's jump on to the next one. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And this is from Richard Randolph.
Yep. And Richard writes, I like to hear your opinions on news topics. I don't always agree with you, but I enjoy your comments all the same. I like the interviews and the small how-tos. How about selecting a topic for a show and discussing all the software or hardware that would help in that area? I agree with you about the news. I get the news every day, but like I said before, the commentary is what I'm interested in. I find your experiences interesting, and I like slick things that you and your staff may have come across.
Yeah, I think that's pretty self-explanatory, actually.
Yep.
That's kind of a cornerstone of a lot of the emails that I read.
Yeah.
Which was, some people said, yeah, you know, the news is kind of out of date by the time you guys get to it because you're only a weekly show.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine being a magazine. It'd be, you know, way out of date, months. But people are more interested in hearing what we have to say about the news because it's commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And so, on that, let's jump to the next one. La, 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 and I have to scroll down. This is from our buddy Klaus. Klaus
yep.
Wolf, part of MyMac.com. He's our, I guess we could say he's our Berlin
correspondent.
Bureau chief.
Yeah, our Berlin bureau chief. There you
he's
go.
Not in Berlin, but he's in Germany, and, you know, same way with...
David Cohen's in Manchester, but we say he's the London bureau chief.
It just sounds very World War II-ish, you know, that whole... I just like it better. Edward R. Murrow.
There you go. Anyways, Klaus writes, Hi, Tim. I'm sitting in Vienna Airport and listening to the podcast, which was posted quite a few days ago. I admit it's late, but this is what I do. I just don't have the time right now.
You know, and that's something that I wrote back, and I said, you know what? The whole point on podcasting is the whole time shift paradigm, that you don't have to listen to it like you do on a radio. You don't have to listen to it right then. With a podcast, you listen at your convenience. You can listen to a little of the show, the entire show, or bits and pieces as you have time. That's what I love about podcasting.
Oh, me too. There's no driveway moments with a podcast.
Exactly. And it's just, I love the whole time shift aspects of it.
Klaus goes on to write, Just as I didn't have time to listen to the podcast yet, I also didn't have time to check the Mac News in quite a few days. So, is the rundown of the old Mac News still interesting? I'm telling you it is. I really enjoy listening to your news picks, and as a reminder, or as a first info, and I'm fairly sure many people do.
And hopefully Klaus wasn't sitting too long in the airport.
Yeah.
That's never fun. So thank you very much, Klaus, for letting us know. I've got to jump down. I think that's probably it right there.
Yeah.
Here's some more other feedback. Philip wrote, he saw this on the unofficial Apple website and verified it by clicking the link. Thought he'd make you guys laugh. I Love My Mac by Daphne Calvin. Is now 99-cent iTunes download. And he says, and the song is no longer fully playable at her site. And then about 5 minutes later, after I read that, he wrote this. Actually, my post is about it being on iTunes. Oh, wait a minute. I wrote that. Sorry. And he wrote back just a few minutes later before I had even wrote it. He goes, I feel great now. After sending the email, I finally saw your post. You had it on your site at the very same thing. It's like, yeah, we did. We posted that. But,
yep.
No, it's cool that he remembered that we had had that on our site and that we had her music here on the podcast. We ought to do an interview with her, too. That
yeah,
would be
Nemo
interesting.
Did a nice interview with her.
Yeah, but we should do an audio interview as well. That might be pretty fun.
If you're a Mac user and you need a hosting service for your website, why would you want to host your site on anything else but a Macintosh? Innotech has been hosting the MyMac.com website for over 7 years, and we wouldn't have it any other way. Are they the cheapest web hosting company in the world? No. Do they offer the largest amount of server space of bandwidth in the world? Of course not. But with Innotech, you don't get pie-in-the-sky false promises, just the best customer service, the most popular hosting service plans, and everything running on the latest Apple Macintosh server gear. Check them out at www.innotech.com/mymac for special pricing. That's www.innotech.com/mymac. Innotech, the trusted web server of mymac.com for over 7 years. That's like 49 dog years.
Dr. Gilamelio was the CEO of National Semiconductor, a company that had its worst loss in 30 years, but returned to record its greatest profit in just 3 years under Dr. Emilio's leadership. He's the holder or joint holder of 16 patents. It was Dr. Emilio who conceived the fabrication process for CCDs, the device used in all digital imaging technologies. He's also a member of the board of directors of the American Film Institute, but to most of our listeners, he's best known as the ex-CEO of Apple Computer and the man responsible for purchasing Next Computers and bringing back Steve Jobs to Apple.
Dr. Gilamelio, thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to us today.
I'm happy to be with you.
Before we get into the Apple history, which I'm sure most of our listeners are the most interested in, this being a Mac show and all, let's start with a little bit of the present, if you don't mind. It's my understanding that you are part of
AquaCore Technology.
Yeah, it's a SPARC, or Special Purpose Acquisition Company, with Steve Wozniak and Heidi Rosen. I understand you can't really divulge anything about.
Well, let's get the data right.
Sure.
Myself, Steve Wozniak, and Ellen Hancock. Not Heidi
Ellen
Rosen.
Hancock. Ellen Hancock. Yeah. That's right.
Right. We are the three founders of AquaCore, and we are still technically in the quiet period. So, other than point out the existence of it, I can't tell you a whole lot about it.
How is it working with Steve Wozniak? Is it personally, he's one of my heroes.
Well, Steve has been, of course, a very close friend for many years, and we've stayed in touch on a very routine basis ever since my days at Apple. And so he's just a delightful guy to work with. He's one of the really great people that you sometimes run into in technology. I think you know it's always nice to see the nice guys do well, and Steve falls into that category.
Now, after reading your book, I know that you were very taken with Ellen Hancock and her performance. I take it it's probably a pleasure working with her again as well.
It is. I've actually known Ellen about 2.5 decades, and we've worked together on several occasions, and so this is a chance for us to do it one more time.
Is she still at IBM as well, or is this what she's doing full time?
No, she left IBM about 10 years ago, and she came to work for me at National Semiconductor when I was running National, and then came to work for me at Apple when I moved over to Apple, and then she became CEO of Exodus, the web hosting company, and then when the meltdown of the .com came, that company sort of followed its customers into bankruptcy, and since then she's been mostly doing board work and just trying to stay active. But when I came along with the idea of doing this new project, she was very excited about it and agreed to come along.
I was reading some of the documents filed with the SEC about this venture, and it says that it's focused on business that develops or provide technology-based products and services in the software, semiconductor, wired and wireless networking, consumer multimedia, and information technology-enabled service segments. But I don't know if that covers quite enough things there.
the idea of the way you do these kinds of projects is you want to make sure you cover enough of the spectrum of relevant technology so that anything that you're likely to ultimately settle on qualifies under the definition. So
and
the reason for that.
The fast food industry didn't make it quite, huh?
I'm just not very good at fast food. That's all I can say.
Going back to some of your history, you have a real rich history in the semiconductor business, but many people don't know that you also hold 16 patents. Do you still work on inventions?
I do, although I haven't filed a patent in a long time. That may be changing. I've been working on a new kind of adaptive processor that could result in some filings. But yeah, I love to stay close to the technology. I think that's been one of the things that I have tried to do that I feel often sets me apart from CEOs who've run very, very large companies who tend to lose their technical currency, and I've tried not to do that.
Adaptive processor sounds like a very simple term, but yet I've got a sinking suspicion that it may be over my head. What is an adaptive processor?
Adaptive processor is a processor that in real time reconfigures itself to solve whatever task needs to be done, but it does so at the hardware level. So imagine the following example. Suppose I could reconfigure a number of elements, a number of logical elements, at my will. And so, take a simple point. If you wanted to add 10 floating point numbers, and you wanted to do that with one of Intel's Pentiums, that would take you about 400 clock cycles to add those 10 floating point numbers. But with an adaptive processor, you use one cycle to set up a 10 input adder, and the next cycle to get the answer. So the concept of adaptive processing it leads you to an extremely better use in terms of what I guess is the figure of merit for semiconductors, which is speed power product. We estimate this has at least an order of magnitude better speed power product. Another way to think of it is just a way of continuing to extend Moore's law. What we'll be able to do with this thing is to make, for example, high definition video processors that will consume less than 1 watt.
Wow.
And be made for less than $10. So it's wow. It's a real breakthrough technology.
It sounds amazing.
It really is.
You seem to be on the cusp of a lot of emerging technologies, adaptive processor being the latest, but looking online and looking up some of your history, it seems that CCD was a pretty big technology. There was nothing else like it before, and you had quite a big hand in making it work.
My role was making it commercially viable. I got 12 of my 16 patents are also in implementations about how how to configure these and how to make them. But the most important patent was a patent that ultimately disclosed a practical way of manufacturing these things, which in the early days was the problem with it. In fact, at one point workers in CCDs became so discouraged about it that I wound up being the only, person that continued to, believe the dream and keep working on it. And then when I saw the problem of how to make them in a practical way, of course, it came back very, very strong and ultimately has become critical in many, many areas of technology.
Yeah, did you ever envision that the CCD would be used in everything from cameras to cell phones to grocery store scanners? I mean, it's just amazing how far-reaching that technology is nowadays.
Had no idea. What I was primarily interested in was making a small camera that might be used by the military or that might be used in some special applications. Had no idea it would wind up being the eyeball of the Hubble Space Telescope or the thing that you use in your everyday camcorder.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of our listeners are going to be very interested in your history with Apple Computer. You were known as a turnaround master for your days at National Semiconductor. So I guess we should jump into a little bit of the Apple stuff, if you don't mind.
No, of course.
Let me see. You want to jump in, Chad? I'm trying to hold the cell phone up at the same time and looking at notes.
Yeah. And we've got a bunch of...
Let me let me just add one thing while you're checking your notes, and that is that I have been an Apple user from the founding of the company. I think I had to buy one of the early Apple IIs when they came out, and I have been a Mac user ever since. So long before I became CEO of Apple, I was already a Mac fanatic.
Now, you had said in an interview shortly after you left Apple that if there was one thing that could bring Apple back to its former glory, it's the next-generation operating system, which you had started to work on with the acquisition of Next. Has OXX developed into the kind of system that you had envisioned when you'd started on the new OS?
Yeah, I actually, you know, the architecture for System 10, which we called Rhapsody as our code name in those days when we were working on it. Today, the way it operates is almost identical to the way we designed it. There are a few minor details that are different, but the concept is almost exactly like it was on my whiteboard in my office. So we're thrilled that it worked out. Now, obviously, guys like Avi Tabanian and many others deserve huge amounts of credit for taking, you know, that simple architecture that we conceived and making it real, but I am thrilled to be using it. What I think everyone would agree is the best personal computer operating system in the world.
You're not going to get an argument from either of us on that score.
No.
Obviously, Apple had a internal next generation operating system project in place called Copeland.
Right.
But how did the management of the Copeland project, which started way before you became part of the CEO of Apple, how did it get so out of control?
Well, you know, I think these things seem to take a life unto themselves. And if you've got to look at part of the Apple culture that existed when I arrived there, and that was very much, there was good things about it, but there was also problems with it. It was very much a free spirit. So if you thought you had a good idea, you just go try it. You didn't worry about being bound by what your manager was telling you, or what corporate focus was, or things like that. And so it was one of those wonderful engineering projects where there was virtually unlimited amounts of money available. And, of course, every day somebody walked in with a new idea, and therefore they had to try it. And so what you had was this enormous engineering project that wasn't converging. It was just engineering for engineering's sake, and at some point, it was clear to me that we had made it so, embellished it so much that there was no way we were going to get a practical operating system out of it, and I had to kill Copeland. And out of that we salvaged what became System 8, which was a hybrid between System 7 and critical pieces of Copeland, and that's how we got to System 8. Now, I think everyone agrees System 8 was an enormous forward over System 7.
Absolutely. Yeah, just the multitasking alone, I mean, you could finally empty the trash and go about your business and doing other tasks at the same time.
Exactly.
Now, looking back under OS 10, for a lot of our listeners obviously never used Mac OS 7, so they don't really understand what that means, but at the time, if you had a lot of items in your trash can and you emptied your trash, the computer would come to a grinding halt until it was done with that process.
Mm.
Same thing with copying files.
That's right. You can only do one task at a time. And that was true of all the early Macs. In fact, almost all the early operating systems until we came along with the Copeland Finder. And that was the most critical piece of Copeland that we used, was we used the Finder. And that had the ability to, as you say, do a number of things that did much better memory management, but it also was able to do multi-threading, and that was a critical improvement.
Reading your book on the firing line, my 500 days at Apple, I remember a part of the book in which you wrote, orders given to subordinates were not taken as orders but as suggestions. Have you ever come across that kind of a mindset in any other company in your professional career?
Well, not exactly. I would say that it was my attempt at humor there, but what I was trying to just to say was that there was a culture there that was so free spirit that it was just what you just said, that the way I had grown up in business was that when the boss said do something, that's what you went and did. you know, at your peril, ignoring it. But in terms of what we had at Apple there, the whole culture was based around this sort of being an outlaw. And I think that grew up over the early days when Steve Jobs, who was so critical to the future of the company, was pretty much a free spirit. He was the guy who broke all the rules. And everyone else wanted to become the next Steve Jobs, so they thought the way to do that was to break every rule. Unfortunately, you can't run a company that way.
And, not a successful one.
First year of my work there was trying to bring some discipline to the organization, which we ultimately did, and which I think is probably pretty characteristic of the company today. But it was a very difficult year.
What was the biggest management problem at Apple when you took over?
Well, I think in the beginning it was money. I mean, we were just out of money. The company had built enormous amounts of inventory of the Performa computers, and the Performa, if you recall, back in those early days, had some major quality problems, and they weren't selling as well as everyone had hoped they would. So we had $2 billion of inventory of Performa computers that weren't selling and no money in the bank. And so I had to do two or three very, very important things. The first thing I had to do was I killed the Performa brand name and stopped the product, because there was no way we were going to, it was so tarnished at that point, there was no way we were going to rescue it. The second thing I did was I went out, and in about a little over 90 days, I raised $660 million of new money, and I brought that into the company. That kept us going.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did was I directed Ellen to start a new project, which we called, I believe the code name was Columbia, but that ultimately became the iMac. And the iMac was born to replace the Performa. And so that's what we did in those early days. So out of that trauma, you know, came some wonderful things.
Now, you know, I emailed you for the first time roughly 3 years ago, and the reason I remember the date is because my wife was still pregnant then.
And you know the age of your daughter.
That's right. I better. And one of the things, because I had just got done reading your book for the first time, I was very tardy in reading it, which usually isn't like me, but in this case it was. I was just so busy for the previous few years. I finally got a chance to read it. And knowing what I did of Apple history up to that point, I've been writing MyMac.com for 11 years at this point, so I know the industry pretty well. And I had been arguing with a lot of other Mac writers, even up to this day, that, yes, Steve Jobs gets a lot and most of the credit for Apple's turnaround, but I always felt that it was the policies that you put into place and the changes that you made in those 500 days at Apple that really set the stage for maybe Steve getting a little of the credit that he really didn't deserve. And one of the things that I have always maintained was that the iMac project was started long before Steve Jobs returned to Apple.
Oh, it started more than a year before he was there.
And that was something that I definitely wanted to clear up, definitely, because a lot of people point to the release of the iMac and the huge success that it had and continues to have as a testament to Steve Jobs' brilliance. However, that wasn't a project that he started.
Well, you know, I think in business, like in so many other walks of life, there's the, you know, there's the unvarnished truth, and then there's the mythology. And it's rare that the unvarnished truth really comes out. I would say only a handful of people who were very close to what was going on in the days I was there really were aware of how much of the foundation for Apple's future success we laid during that time, including what became the ultimate famous white paper I wrote on, here's how we need to rebuild Apple to be great. What is amazing to me is that virtually everything that I wrote in that paper has come to pass. We started some of it, but didn't get to implement nearly enough. But Steve, I think, who bought into most of the ideas I had in there, just continued to develop those things. And one of the things I even predicted 10 years ago was that was that the Apple would ultimately move to the Intel platform. It's kind of interesting to see that just recently took place.
Well, here's another one, and I don't know if anybody's reminded you of this recently or not, especially in what's going on in the world right now. On page 275 and 276 of your book, you wrote, "I predict one day Steve Jobs will conquer Hollywood as dramatically as he conquered Silicon Valley. Michael Eisner, watch out. Steve Jobs now has a new talent on his resume, displacing the CEO. The Walt Disney Company could be next." Is your middle name Nostradamus, maybe?
I may not be good at a lot of things, but I've been pretty good at predicting trends, and that this one was pretty clear because obviously I had gotten to know Steve very, very well by working so closely with him. And it was just, in my opinion, it was just sort of reading the tea leaves in a pretty easy way as to what his ambitions were.
Well, you know, I could say that it has been 3 years since I read your book. But obviously I picked it up this past weekend to refamiliarize myself with it before we spoke. And when I came across that, I about fell out of my chair. I went, wow, yeah. This is a person who should be giving stock tips or something. Cause...
No, I don't do that. I do give you, fun talks. But if you want some prognostication, why don't I just volunteer about a 2-minute soliloquy on what I think is coming over the next 10 years that you may find interesting and the world of technology in general. Now, I won't be specific to the Mac. And that is that we are at a very unique period in technological history, and most people aren't even tuned into it yet, but they will be soon. I have two fundamental beliefs. One belief is that technology evolves in waves, not in a nice straight line, and I think we all would probably subscribe to that. And each decade seems to have its own wave. So way back in the 80s, we had the big wave was, of course, the rise of the personal computer. In the 90s, the big wave was the rise of the Internet. You know, okay, so what do we have today? The second belief I have is that changes in one area of technology ultimately ripple through and change other areas of technology. And again, here's an example. In the 1980s, while the PC was booming quietly in the background, the telcos were putting fiber in the ground in the inter-exchange backbone. And of course, if you're going to lay a cable, you might as well lay a big cable. And so there was enormous amounts of bandwidth available that was dark. Well, when the Internet came along 10 years later, and they needed all of this bandwidth, there it was already in the ground. So what happened? The Internet doubled every 60 days for 5 years. And the reason it happened was because of that. So now let's ask the question about what's going on now. There's three very important trends going on. One I call convergence. And what convergence means is the fact that with the rise of the Internet and the Internet protocol, everyone is now beginning to standardize on that as a communications vehicle. So for example, you see voice over IP or you see IPTV, and you're going to see more of that. But it's not just in the protocol that you're seeing convergence. It's also into the way that technologies are integrated. So analog and digital are coming together, and content and computing are coming together, and et cetera. There's more and more of that going on. That's a huge, huge trend because it allows you to do things you never could do before. So that's sort of big trend number one. Big trend number two is, as I think no one would disagree with, is mobile communications. You know, 10 years ago, you could pick up your cell phone and make a voice call. Okay, that's cool. Today, look what you can do. You can do everything from taking pictures, sending pictures, instant messages, email, and heaven knows what else. And with third generation rolling out and fourth generation coming next decade, you're going to be doing much, much, much more of that. So that's a biggie. And then third thing that's going on is in consumer electronics, where what you have is a switch from analog to digital television. Now, we've been on analog standard in television for 60-odd years. We're finally changing to digital. And, by the way, at the same time, we're changing from the old NTSC standard to the high def standard. This is an extremely disruptive change. It means you're basically going to have to replace the entire installed base of entertainment equipment out there, from DVDs and VCRs and TVs and camcorders and everything else. And so here we sit at the beginning, at the early stages of an era where we have three enormous upward trends that are uplifting technology. And these three, it's remarkable when you have any one of these going on, as we have typically in the past. To have three happening at the same time means that for the next 10 years, you're going to see an explosion in technology and technology businesses that is unparalleled with the excitement of the past. I think this cycle will be bigger than any cycle that's come before. And it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun to be involved in technology, whether you're involved in the hardware side or the software side or the communication side or the content side. Ultimately, it's going to be the integration of all four of those things that's going to lead to exciting new products. That's my prediction.
I think you're already seeing a lot of that. I mean, this show right now that we're recording is a testament to the advances and the change in dichotomy when it comes to taking advantage of time shifting, time sharing. You know, we're recording basically a radio program, except it's not on radio waves, and it's something that people will download and listen to at their leisure rather than being force-fed to them.
Right.
And, you know, there's so much more choice out there, so I agree with you 100%. It's super exciting to be where we are right now, and I can't wait to see how it all plays out.
Yeah.
I got another question for you.
Sure.
What do you think was the most, what was your best accomplishment at Apple? What's the one thing that you can look back on and said, I did that, that was mine?
Well, I'm going to give you two different answers to that, because I think there's two ways of looking at it. One is that the thing I'm actually most proud of is the management discipline that I ultimately built into the company. This is the way we get things done at Apple, discipline that's there. It was the whole, what I call the management process, I put in place in a company that had been around for a number of years. It had remarkably few formal processes that you need to run any multi-billion-dollar company. And I put all of those in place, and those are still clicking along, and really made the company have the ability to operate in a viable way, as opposed to this shoot from the hip. We just one small example is in the days when I took over, we were losing $50 million a month just on currency exchange, because there was no system put in place to manage currency exchange. The company was out of control, is a word you used before, and I think it was true, but it was not only true in technology, it was true in everything. And I think that was my biggest accomplishment, was taming that. I think in terms of the product side and the technology side, I have to talk about operating system decisions I made. When you think about the series of decisions I made, they turned out having an enormous impact on the future of Apple. Killing Copeland, coming up with System 8, laying the foundation for System 10, and including the architecture that came to dominate the system. I think when you put those three things together, it totally changed Apple, and changed Apple for the better. So I'm thrilled. I still use I have nothing but Mac computers, but I love using this new operating system.
I say I jump in my time machine right now, and I go back exactly 10 years, which is kind of amazing when you figure it was just 10 years ago that mm-hmm. you were the CEO of Apple Computer. In fact, you had just started.
I had just started, right.
And I give you a copy of your book. What do you make? What changes do you make from reading your book, and where is Apple now?
Well, I think if you looked at a lot of the forecasts I made, virtually every one of them is in there. Remember, I had five or six themes that I was pushing. ease, of course, the continuation of ease of use as the ultimate mantra that the company had to have. Better performance clearly is something that Apple began to focus on. Remember, back 10 years ago, the Mac was decidedly slower than its Intel competitors, and it was a source of great complaining by a lot of people. That has been rectified. Communications ability, the ability to be connected, was my third theme there, which clearly we've come light years with. And one of the things I was stressed was wireless communications as well, which again has really matured in those intervening years. Another one of the things I said was that we had to have more of an ability to exist in a Wintel world, and therefore be able to read, manage, and deal with all of the files we inevitably were going to be getting because of so many of our coworkers are going to be coming at us with Wintel standards. And then, of course, the fifth one was industrial design. I built up the industrial design department. I said, look, Macs shouldn't just be good. They should be good looking. And created that. So those five themes that, if you go back and read my original white paper that I wrote, let's see, I came out with it about May of 96. So that was almost exactly 10 years ago, within a few months. All of those things have come to pass, and all of those things have been future in making Apple the company it is today.
Again, with that and your prediction about the Walt Disney Company, I think you're a brilliant man. Let me ask you just a couple of off-the-cuff questions, if you don't mind. What is your guilty pleasure now?
My guilty pleasure, huh?
Yep, your guilty pleasure.
I'm not sure I have one. I love aviation. I love flying. I love being pilot and doing that. That's one of my great pleasures. But you know, I think what something happens to you as you start getting a little older. You know, when you're younger, you're in the process of accumulating things. When you get just a little bit older, you finally find that some of the simple pleasures are really the ones that stay with you the most. So I just enjoy, like this past weekend, I had two of my grandchildren over and just watching these two little people develop into as they have been, I take great pleasures in that. So I would say that, and the other thing, I guess, is my other guilty pleasure is I love fooling around with Photoshop on my Mac and editing photos and things like that. And I've made sort of a long-term project of restoring the old family album with photos that go back for more than 100 years.
Wow!
And bringing those photos kind of back to life again in a new and exciting way. And I do it as time permits. There's no rush. There's no deadline. But I do get a lot of pleasure and enjoyment in it.
What do you do at the American Film Institute?
At the American Film Institute, I would say you have to go back to the beginning, because when I was at Apple, they came to me and they said, gee, they really wanted someone in technology to come onto their board and to be active in it, and they felt like technology was changing the film industry and they needed to do that. I have always had a great love for movies. I had a family member who was actually my uncle. My father's brother was actually employed by MGM. And of course, the CCD kept me very interested in video and capturing images and the moving image and so forth. And so I was kind of thrilled to go on to that. It's a charitable organization, but mostly what it does is, besides promoting the industry itself, is it trains the next generation of filmmakers. And that is, you know, so exciting to see young people. And I go to the commencement ceremony every year when the next class graduates from the conservatory and West Hollywood there, and watch these young people go off to start their film careers. And what's so exciting is to see someone like a Patty Jenkins, who comes along and in a few years is winning Academy Awards. And I remember seeing her walk down the, to get her graduation certificate. So I find a lot of pleasure in that. I enjoy meeting some of the people in that industry, and I've got 1,000 more stories I could tell you about various and sundry stars and producers and directors and so forth. But of course, I'm going to refrain from doing that.
Good.
it is a lot of fun. I enjoy it a lot.
Now, you know, not necessarily lately, but within the last few years, there's been so many stories about crooked CEOs. As an ex-CEO, what do you think about that? When you look at a company like Enron and what their CEO is accused of, and the Tyco situation, and mm-hmm. how does that?
I think it is completely unforgivable. There's just no ways about it. You know, the way I grew up was believing that your integrity was, at the end of the day, your integrity was all you really had. Because everything else could be transient, but if you lost your integrity, you lost everything. And so it was my hallmark was to never cut corners in running business, that you could do everything you wanted to do within the confines of what was proper, and there was no need to break the rules. I think tremendous disservice has been done to American business. I think the average citizen out there is always a little worried about these highfalutin CEOs, is now even more worried, and I think that's a tremendous misfortune for our grandchildren and future generations, because at the end of the day, business employs virtually everybody in the country, and it is the bedrock of our economy. We need to make sure that it is not contaminated. And I feel very strongly about that.
I want to personally thank you for everything that you did to keep Apple Computer viable during your tenure. And I honestly don't think you get enough of the credit that is definitely due you. Hopefully, you know, for Mac users who weren't around at the time, maybe this will be a little bit of an education for them. But personally, I just wanted to thank you for keeping a company I care very deeply about viable, and everything that you've done since then is just, I think you're a man of honor, and I just wish that the majority of the people who really follow Apple would give a little bit more credit where I think it's due.
Well, thank you so much. That's very kind of you to say that.
Yeah. We definitely wanted to thank you for being on the podcast, mm-hmm. and wish you all the best in your new ventures.
Thank you so much, and I will talk to you soon.
Great, thanks.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
And that was our interview with Dr. Gil Amelio. Fantastic interview. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yes, absolutely.
And hopefully he enjoyed it as well. We do have a dashboard minute from Guy Searle, so let's jump into that real quick.
You're listening to the Dashboard Minute, heard exclusively right here on the MyMac.com podcast.
Please hang up and try again.
Hi, everyone. I'm Guy Searle, and welcome again to the Dashboard Minute. I have two widgets to tell you about today, and they were both authored by the same person, George Kandel. I should mention that while the widgets are free, the author does request a PayPal donation. Considering the usefulness of these two widgets, anything sent would be money well spent. The first one is one I've reviewed before, but deserves another mention. It's called Widget Update, and like most things widgety, does one thing, but does it very well. If you're like most people, you download your widgets and then typically never think about them again until you're going to use them. Most authors of widgets are constantly updating them, but unless you go out to the various dashboard sites and look them up yourselves, well, you'll never know. Updated widgets often include increased functionality or graphics improvements and necessary bug fixes. Widget Update by George Candle does all the hard work for you and scours the major widget sites for updates and gives them to you in a clickable list. Hit the link. The widget goes to your default web browser and downloads the update. Apple does the rest by asking if you want to download and then replace the existing widget. One word of caution, if you have widgets with customized information and features, chances are the update will wipe them out as well. As with anything else, make sure you can recover valuable information before initializing the update. All in all, this is a slick and well-executed widget. Well worth the time to go and get it. It has a permanent place in my dashboard dock, and I run it about once a month or so to make sure that all my widgets are up to date. The next one I just recently found, and it is also by George Candle. It's very similar to the Widget Update widget, and it's called Application Update. Considering that the Widget Update updates widgets, it should come as no surprise that this one updates your applications in the Finder. Now, this requires a little more work because of the way the Unix-flavored OS X operates. No, you don't have to go to Terminal or anything geeky like that, but you do have to type in the path to your Applications folder for the Applications Update to work properly. Fortunately, George gives you some examples to make it easier for you. Always start with a forward slash symbol and add the name of the folder that holds your all your applications, like the Applications folder, and then another forward slash. If you have applications or games in other areas of your hard drive that you want to periodically update using this widget, you can add the path to this folder as well. This is one very cool widget. Like I said, these widgets are free to download, but if you have a little scratch to spare, considering sending a few bucks to the author George Candle via the PayPal links on the info side of these two widgets. If you have any questions or comments about the Dashboard Minute, or if there's a widget you like or have made that I haven't covered yet, send me email to dbminute@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and be here again next time right here on the Dashboard Minute on the MyMac.com podcast.
Most websites are only there for you to buy something.
Buy, buy,
save,
buy.
Save, save.
At smalldog.com, well, they're happy if you buy something, but that's just half the story. Take a walk around smalldog.com and you'll find the inside scoop on Mac products and lots of helpful how-tos for beginners and experts alike. Digital photography and graphic design, music and sound, small business and more. From iTunes to inkjets, Apple to Ziff. Smalldog.com, so you can love your Mac more. High technology at low prices. Smalldog.com.
Thank you to Small Dog Electronics for being one of our sponsors. Another sponsor is iRox USA.
Yep. Here on the podcast, we've talked a lot about the iRox KR6810X Slim keyboard, which is the lighting keyboard. But iRox makes a lot more great accessories for your Mac or PC.
They offer a full line of USB enclosures for drives ranging from 1.8 to 3.5 inches.
They also have a great selection of optical mice in a variety of colors, all of which are equipped with the iRox revolutionary new 800 DPI sensor capable of capturing even the smallest movements.
iRox also offers a great selection of card readers capable of supporting compact flash, smart media, multimedia cards, secure digital cards, IBM micro drive cards, memory stick pro cards.
And finally, iRox also offers some great multimedia accessories, including the ultra slim USB speakers,
the USB phone, which supports MSN, NetMeeting, Yahoo Messenger, and Skype,
FM transmitters,
and AC adapters for charging USB devices.
And don't forget, iRox offers a great selection of keyboards. You can check out all their product offerings at www.i-roxusa.com.
And of course, check our show notes for a direct listing to iRox USA. Thank you very much for your patronage, iRox USA.
Yep.
Can't do the show without a few sponsors to pay the bills.
And thanks to iRox and Small Dog and Innotech.
And everybody else for downloading the podcast.
Yeah.
Now, we're already at almost an hour and 5 minutes, and you know what? We've still got stuff to talk about.
We sure do.
So we're going to jump right in to the news. Apple has announced a press event for February 28th at the Apple campus to announce, quote, fun new products. So let the speculation begin. The real video iPod, a Mac Mini Intel machine, Intel iBooks, iPhones, Steve Jobs on purchasing the Hair Club for Men company. Is Steve Jobs really bald? Okay, yes, I'm getting carried away.
Yeah. Also, a ton of photos have turned up online showing the new MacBook Pro being unpacked. Besides the Xbox 360, is there another company who inspires their buyers as much as Apple? I mean, pictures of unpacking a computer, and it's linked all over the internet like this is news. I mean, is it me, or is this simply an amazing thing?
The news sites are linking to pictures of a new Apple product being unboxed. You can see pictures of the actual thing on Apple's website, but yet here's all these pictures of the MacBook Pro being unboxed. There's just not another company. There was pictures like that of the Xbox 360 when it came out, yes, but there's just not another company with products that you see that kind of thing on. Not that I'm aware of, anyways.
No.
It's crazy. The iTunes Music Store and NBC had a cool idea. Show a pilot of a new show before it is even shown on television and offer it for free. This is an inspiring idea and a great marketing ploy. Think about it. If people who freely download the show, which is called Conviction, by the way, enjoy it, you know they will spread the word to those without computers or iPods, and they will probably be more apt to tune in and watch the television show when it comes on. It's a brilliant move, I think.
Yeah.
Showing a pilot and letting people download it for free, a full television show, absolutely free, right on iTunes that you can view right on your iPod, doesn't cost a dime.
Well, it's a great way for them to actually gauge demand for the show.
It's just a brilliant marketing ploy.
Yep. Other news, Microsoft is giving away $100,000 worth of Mac stuff. And yes, you heard that right, Microsoft is giving away Macs. Called the Microsoft Office for Mac Spring Cleaning Sweepstakes, they are giving away copies of Office 2004 for Mac, Apple Cinema displays, MacBook Pros, new office furniture, Bose Sound Dock for the iPod, 30GB iPod photos, Microsoft Wireless Laser Keyboard and mouse for the Mac, and an Xbox 360.
You can get more information at www.office4macsweeps.com. I'll put a link in the show notes.
And we've got a contest winner for our PC Weenies contest.
Obviously, we had the interview with
Krishna Sadasivan
last week on the podcast 69. Definitely go check that out if you haven't heard it yet. The contest was for a walk-on role on the PC Weenies, as well as the original artwork. And we have a winner from Tampa, Florida.
Yep, that's Eric Krust.
Christel,
I believe it's pronounced.
Yep, and so congratulations to Eric. And you guys can check out the PC Weenies at pcweenies.org. And definitely, once again, thanks for the interview last week, Krishna.
Yep.
We're actually running way over the allotted time that we were planning on doing the podcast. So we're going to cut a little bit out the show, and we're going to put it in next week's show, which I think it's going to be fun to do. Mm-hmm. But let's go ahead and talk about software for starving students. I can't take the credit for finding this one. I actually subscribed to a few newsletters from our sponsor, Small Dog Electronics, and it was in their Tech Tales 303 that I found this.
About Software for Starving Students enhances the computing experience by providing an easy way to install free, high-quality software titles via a user-friendly interface. It includes popular open-source programs like Firefox and OpenOffice, intended to help students learn about and benefit from open-source and free software programs. The SSS team put all the most commonly used free programs onto one CD to make it easier for students to install useful software, including fully featured office suites, 3D graphics editors, and much more for free. We created the SSS, and this is them speaking, we created the SSS CD because we love open source software and want to help make it more accessible to students all around the world. Although all students need good software to be successful, many have a hard time getting it on student budgets. We empathize with them because we've felt that pinch ourselves. This software enables students to achieve more for less, and that inspires us. People all over the world are using free software to make their lives better. After all these years of mooching off of great volunteer programmers, this is our little way of saying thanks by providing a tool that makes their great free software more accessible to software-hungry students from Boston to Bangalore. We feel we've given a little back to the free software community and to students all over the world.
So this is a software package that's basically an all-in-one. It's 498 megabytes in size. That's a large, large download. So, yep. Obviously, if you are on dial-up, you are not going to download this package.
No.
But, you know, I read about this and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Someone put all this open source and free software, not not everything out there, obviously, but stuff that's really good for students. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is something that we definitely want to bring attention to on the podcast. We obviously have quite a few students that listen to this mm-hmm. all over the world.
Yep.
And you know what? It's not just for students, though. There's a lot of people out there that use their Macs that don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And they, too, could benefit from knowing about free open source software that they can use
yep.
right now on their Macs. And that's really what this podcast is all about, trying to enable Mac users to get more out of their Mac experience mm-hmm. and maybe learn a little bit about Apple history, hence our interview with Gil Emilio and, you know, stuff like that. So here's a list of the programs you will find on the Software for Students. It's technically, they call it a CD, but you download it.
Yeah.
And you download it so you can put it on a CD.
Mm-hmm.
And those include...
In the Art and Graphics Department, we've got Pac Ray and Tux Ping.
In the Astronomy and Space, Celestia and Stellarium.
In Computer Science, you've got CyberDuck, Find, NVU, and Smultron.
In Games, BZ Flag, Crack Attack. That's a crazy one there.
Yeah.
Enigma, GLTron, and Tux Racer.
In Internet, you've got Adium, Azurus, Firefox, and Simple Widget.
In Keyboard, Type Training for Mac, which is a good program. I've actually tried that one.
In Multimedia, you've got Audacity, Blender, and VideoLand Client.
In Office, you've got GraphicsViz and OpenOffice.org, which, if you can't afford Microsoft's Office, here's a really, really great open source alternative.
In Personal Finance, you've got Cashbox.
In Security, you've got Clam, XAV, iShred, and Pastor. iShred is another program that I've actually tried.
Mm-hmm.
It works really well.
And in Studying, you've got FreeMind, Orator, and VoodooPad Lite.
And finally, in the Utilities section, you'll find Active Timer, Carbon Copy Cloner, which a lot of people use, mm-hmm. Desktop Manager, Image Burner, MD5 App, Tweak Freak, and Witch.
Yep.
And here's a hint I learned using Safari, by the way. Did you know that if your download is interrupted, you can bring up the Downloads window within Safari and click the little circle arrow button to the right of the partially downloaded file? And Safari will actually resume downloading that file where you left off. Of course, if you moved or deleted the partially downloaded file, you will have to start over. In other words, if you're downloading something, you accidentally canceled it, or mm-hmm. it just timed out. That happens if yeah. you're downloading big files. When you bring up that little tinier, that's good English there, that little tiny Downloads window,
mm-hmm.
You'll see the name of the file that you were downloading. There's going to be a little circle with an arrow on it. If you click that, it's going to resume the download right where it left off, which is, I think that's very cool. And I know a yep. lot of people probably didn't realize that. I also found this handy feature for another reason. For instance, when I was downloading the Software for Starving Students file, and like I said, it's 498 megabytes.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, the file would start to download very fast. But as time went on, it would slow down to a crawl. In other words, when I first started, it said it was going to take about an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 minutes later, I came back and it said it was going to take 2 days.
Yeah.
I said, what the heck? Wow, that's just way too slow.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the Dialogues window, I would click the Cancel button and then click the Resume button. It would again start downloading where I left off, but much faster than before. So in other words, it's downloading real fast, it slows down.
Yep.
I click Cancel, and then I hit Resume, boom, and it picks up the speed. Mm-hmm. I had to do that about 4 times until it finally just downloaded quickly the entire time.
Mm.
Good handy feature I think a lot of people
yeah.
probably don't know about. Got a little bit more time. Another problem I ran into this last week, I ran into the iTunes 5 computer authorized limit. In other words, I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this, if you're using iTunes to buy your music from,
mm-hmm.
you can authorize 5 computers
right.
to access those files through. I hit the limit. And the reason I knew I hit the limit is because, if you remember the last show or the show before, I told about switching from my old G5 to the new G5.
Right.
I got up running on the new G5 and it said, guess what?
You exceeded the Fair Play
yeah,
allowance.
And
yeah.
I can't authorize this computer.
Ugh.
So I went, oh boy, what am I going to do? Funny thing was, I found a post, I don't remember where it was now, that had that exact topic.
Mm.
Talking about how to deauthorize all the computers on your iTunes Music Store account.
Wow.
The thing is, I only know of 3 computers that I had authorized.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know which other computers are out there. Was it ones that I sold, ones that broke? I just didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went into iTunes. I clicked my username up there in the right-hand corner of mm-hmm. the music store.
Right.
It brings up all your stats and contact information. At the bottom, mm-hmm. there's a button that says deactivate all those accounts.
Hmm.
I click that. It deactivated them all. Then, on the computers that I actually want to still use,
mm-hmm.
I just reactivated them on those computers. I'm all set. I've got five authorized computers now, and or three, and I have two more that I can use. But I've never ran into that problem before, and I was like, what am I going to do? Even if you mm-hmm. erase the hard drive on the other computer that was authorized to play the songs, it doesn't matter because iTunes Music Store itself ties it to a certain machine,
yeah,
not a copy of iTunes itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to know.
Yep.
There's one last thing. Everybody's always talking about, what do you do with your Mac, Tim? And send me a screen snapshot of your setup. I don't know why people like that so much. People really seem to dig looking at other people's Macintosh setups. And maybe mm-hmm. one day I'll post mine too. But one of the things I did over this past week, I actually set up a second display on my machine. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, if you have a G5, you'll see you have two monitor
outputs
on the back of yep. your Mac. If people plug into one, they think, well, the other one's off by default then because I'm not using it. Guess what? It's not. You can actually plug a second monitor into it.
Hmm.
And it will, in effect, give you a much larger desktop. I put my second screen to the right of my Mac,
mm-hmm.
To the right of my Cinema display, I should say, and it's a 17 TFT Samsung mm-hmm. display. So basically, as I move my cursor over my Cinema display, it'll jump to the other monitor. Which is
sweet.
Really sweet, right. But what's the benefit of that? Well, number one, I do a lot of graphic work, so mm-hmm. I can put a lot of my menus and stuff over there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really what I use it for. Usually what I use it for is I put my iTunes window over there.
Yeah.
So that's always open to the right. But here's something else I thought of. As a lot of our longtime listeners will know, I've got two 11-year-old daughters
mm-hmm.
and a 2.5-year-old daughter.
Right.
Well, the older daughters love to play video games. Now, obviously, I don't let them play video games all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But and then I enjoy an occasional video game romp as well.
Yep.
Here's the problem. If we're sitting in the living room and you want to play video games, nobody else can watch television.
Mm-hmm.
When I say video games, I'm talking about PlayStation 2, Xbox, no Xbox 360 for Tim right now, and the GameCube.
Right.
So if you want to watch, or if you want to watch television and somebody else wants to play video games, it's a coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, with a 2.5-year-old, it's really not... It's not easy to play video games in the front room on the main television, simply because if you're sitting there playing the game with the cords for the controller stretched across,
yeah.
the little one's going to get tangled up, rip the cord out of your hand, or rip the console right out of the...
Mm-hmm.
It's just not an ideal situation.
Right.
Well, you know, I review that Alchemy TV / DVR card
mm-hmm.
a couple months ago, and that's still connected inside my G5.
Mm-hmm.
It's got video inputs. So what I did is I took all three of the game consoles, plus the AV switcher that I used to... So I only have to... I plug all the game consoles into the... It's just a switch box.
Right.
And then that goes to the television. Instead, now that goes to the Alchemy card.
Mm-hmm.
So I tune the Alchemy card to composite in, and I use the switch box to decide which game system, and that actually plays on that second monitor.
Mm-hmm.
on my computer now. Now, the resolution isn't as great as it is on television.
Sure.
But honestly, for the girls playing Mario, it's more than adequate.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really cool is because that's not an active program running on the computer. It's just displaying whatever the video signal is, which happens
right.
to be, you know, the video game.
Yep.
So I can actually sit there working on the computer on the Cinema display,
mm-hmm.
and they could be sitting right next to me playing the video games on the other monitor. But whatever I'm doing has no effect at all on what they're doing.
Great.
And they can make that full screen and everything.
Uh-huh.
I think that's something that a lot of Mac users may not be aware of, that you can do something like that. And, you know, the two older kids are just thrilled because they can start playing games again
mm-hmm.
without interrupting everybody else's viewing habits and not worrying about how long am I going to be able to play before Brooke ends up ripping the controller out of my hand and you
right.
just have to stop because you can't concentrate on what you're trying to do. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
A new way to use existing technology that's fun, innovative, and it's a space saver for me.
Yeah.
It looks really impressive when you look at my computer setup now. I've got two monitors. I've got the G5. I've got the G4 sitting next to each other. The G4 is more or less a server.
Right.
The G5 is my everyday machine. Above those on the desktop, I've got the Xbox, the PlayStation, and the GameCube. Mm-hmm. And next to that is the Mac Mini. And on the shelf above is the Atari Mac. So it looks very impressive, but it's really not. I mean, it's just...
Take a picture, send it out to people who want to see your setup.
Yeah, if you want to see a picture, let me know, and I'll take a picture and I'll send it to you. I know there's one person in New Zealand who does want to see that. So
yeah,
that's our show for today. Again, thanks to Gil Emilio for a great interview and giving up some time. We really, really appreciate it.
And thanks to all our sponsors, and thanks to all our contributors, and thanks to you, our listeners.
We'd love to hear your feedback, either about the show itself or about the Gil Emilio interview. Send feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com, or you can send it directly to me at tim@mymac.com, and I'll share it with Chad.
Yep, and we've got a lot of other interviews lined up. I think you're really going to enjoy...
We let the cat out of the bag. Well, the other one, not Dvorak.
No.
The other one is confirmed for March something.
Yes, we have them lined up for the 8th, the 15th, and the 22nd.
The 15th is the one I'm talking about.
You're talking about the 8th.
No, I'm not talking about MS.
No.
The other one who's in Florida right now.
Right.
Oh, well, we can say who that is. It's lined up. He's agreed.
Yeah.
We're going to have an interview with Robert X. Kringley, one of my favorite authors at PBS.org. He's the creator of Revenge of the Nerds? I forget the documentary he made years ago. Mm. It's really great. It's going to be a really great interview. We're really looking forward to that. Next week, we have scheduled Microsoft. Hopefully, that will still go through. Things happen with big companies, and you can't always guarantee that people are going to be on when they say they're going to. But we're going to try it in our best and make sure we get Microsoft on the show next week. Mm-hmm. And if we do, we got some really, really exciting news to announce while Microsoft is on the air with us.
Oh, good deal.
So turn into the MyMac.com podcast. You can find all the information you need at MyMac.com. If you want any more information on this show, look for show notes for episode number 70. And, of course, you can download and subscribe to us at the iTunes Music Store. All the links are at mymac.com. Thank you for listening.
See ya.
I'm Tim.
I'm Chad.
Bye.
Thanks for downloading the mymac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at mymac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the mymac.com podcast.